And welcome to Talking Fußball, the Bundesliga show, your source for all things German football. And boy, it's been a while since I've been on, but alas, since then things haven't really gone in my direction. How I wish we could go back to the 80s when Bayern only won 6 out of a possible 10 championships and Frankie went to Hollywood, but whilst I've been away in the woods of Norway, Bayern all but sealed the deal and pretty much, as everyone agrees, won the title. But hey, not all things are bad. Considering that Rick Astley did in fact give up on us. My name is Nick Wildhagen, and alongside me to break down all the action of Matchday 28 is Full Router podcaster and Borussia Mönchengladbach fan and keen Bundesliga follower, Manuel Breyer. Welcome to the show once again, Manuel.
Hey Nick, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. In today's episode, we'll be circling in on Borussia Mönchengladbach. We'll spend quite some time talking about them. Additionally, we'll also feature the matches between Eintracht Frankfurt and Wolfsburg, the Borussia Dortmund turnaround, and what's been going on in the battle against relegation quite heavily on this show. So, this is part one of Talking Fußball, and Manuel, it's no secret that you are partial to the Foles, so let's start off with your team. Must have been quite a roller coaster ride for you on Saturday. Jan Sommer, your goalkeeper, was sent off after 13 minutes. Hertha seemed to make the man advantage count when Santiago Ashiba hammered home a shot from outside the area. But then, suddenly, the Foles kicked into gear, and Player and Stindl turned things around in the first half. What did you make of this topsy-turvy first half of your team?
A really interesting performance, really interesting match for, I think, also the neutral, you know, spectators, and certainly a roller coaster for Gladbach and Hertha supporters. I thought Gladbach did a really, you know, fine job, not only in the first half, but also in the second half, which was more, you know, defensively colored, but especially turning around the Hertha lead in the first half with two excellent goals. It has to be said. I mean, of course, one is a penalty by Stindl, but the play, you know, leading to the goal or to the penalty, was quite well executed. And you know that you have to show some guts and come back from this. And it hasn't been easy for Gladbach in the Rückrunde overall, right?
Yeah. So you mentioned that it ended up 2-2 and obviously, John Córdoba got a goal back for Hertha in the second half. Despite that, Gladbach held onto the point. How annoyed were you in the end that your team actually let a lead slip?
I think if you look at the overall stats and overall, you know, shots on goal and the way Hertha was pushing, even or especially after the equalizer, pushing for the third goal, you have to be satisfied. You know, playing with 10 men for about 75 minutes, but overall, I felt, you know, there were a lot of 50-50 decisions that went against Gladbach. Not to say that the ref got it wrong, but it's just so it has to be one or the other. And it always went the wrong side, especially the 2-2 offside or onside rather decision was, you know, there was never any still image of the line from the VAR overruling. So you feel a little bit, ooh, you know, why so many decisions that could have gone the other way? There was the Thuram penalty situation in the second half. Some are sending off, which is okay, of course. But, you know, lots of little aspects where you could felt it would have been so great for the team to come back from this with 10 men and actually get all 3 points.
But we talked a lot about Gladbach and how they hit sort of a slump in form ever since Marco Rose announced that he was going to leave the club at the end of the season. But, you know, in the last couple of weeks, the club and the team have certainly turned a corner, haven't they?
Yes, I would feel that the 3-0 victory away to Schalke was somewhat a turning point, but more importantly, the second half against Freiburg last week was important to where Freiburg completely outplayed Gladbach, and there was an awful first half. So just getting these points, no matter how, really, because the Schalke game was all but brilliant, has calmed the atmosphere around Borussia Park, and most supporters are now also focusing on who's gonna replace Marco Rose. So focus has shifted away, and some of the players also re-gets into their, well, second form after autumn matches or summer matches were quite good. We've seen Thuram now being really deadly again and really dangerous in the box. Player now scored against Berlin after he last scored against Union Berlin in January. And most of all, Dennis Zakaria, who's played a sort of a you know, sweeper in the back three or back five again, on the weekend. He, you know, after having been injured for 8, 7, 9 months maybe, he's now back to his old self, at least in the last two or three matches.
Yes, and additionally, I mean, one of the things that really struck me for like the last few weeks was always the fact that there was a lot of things written in the press about, you know, the team not standing behind Marco Rosa and this and that. But at the end of the day, I never felt like he lost the dressing room, because it seemed like the players were still responding to what he was telling them, first of all. And second of all, I do think that most of these guys are professionals, and they know if Dortmund came knocking on their door, they couldn't say no either, could they? So I think the last couple of weeks, if anything, they've proven that Marco Rosa's what he says still goes over well with the players.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I think overall this is often overestimated how independent or how dependent a football team is, football team of professionals, I shall add, is on their manager or, you know, the coach. They implement something, the team follows these ideas, but ultimately it's them deciding things on the pitch. So you can see this nowadays with clubs like Bayern Munich, where you can see a lot of talking. I'm not saying that, of course, Hansi Flick is not a, you know, very, very suitable manager, but they micromanage their own game on the pitch. And it's probably also true to a large extent with Gladbach. Now, there have been some instances where you felt in the games they lost, or in this losing streak they had now in February and in March, you know, at times the sort of team trailed off, you know, leading against Leipzig and other teams, and then being completely hammered or running out of steam against Dortmund, Leverkusen in the second half, losing at home to Mainz. There were a few instances where you felt, well, maybe it's just your head goes down more easily, or there's a little bit missing, and it's just the wrong atmosphere around the club at the moment. So I think it certainly did play a role, but it's not an all or nothing, the situation where the players just don't care anymore because Rosa, you know, decides to move on, which they, most of them, will eventually as well.
Indeed. Well, I mean, looking at the table, 4 points up to Europa League spot, only 1 point, I think, to what currently is called the Conference League. But where do you see Gladbach heading for the rest of the season? Do you think that Marco Rosa can sort of get a somewhat decent goodbye from Borussia Park and secure a place in the Europa League?
Yes, I hope. I mean, of course, I hope so, because, you know, not necessarily have to add for Marco Rosa, but just because, you know, because of the supporters and following the club for decades, I just always want, you know, the optimum on what you can get out of a season. And I think facing Frankfurt next week is a big match. If you get any points from this, you can certainly then look to maybe beat Hoffenheim and Bielefeld, and it's just, it's up for grabs to finish sixth or seventh. The other teams in that part of the league, they're not exactly, you know, winning every week. So certainly you should try to just, you know, get as much out of this. The season is far from being over, and I think the players have really shown that they still care in the last three games, picking up 7 points.
Now, as we mentioned, Marco Rose is going to that other Borussia. And you mentioned Frankfurt there. That's interesting, not only because they're your opponents next week, but Bild has written today that Gladbach have agreed terms with Adi Hütter, who's, as most of our listeners will know, currently employed by Eintracht Frankfurt. Kicker has strongly suggested the same thing, that Hütter is one of the top candidates for the job at Borussia Park. Now, Bild usually get those things right. However, they sort of shot themselves in the foot a little bit in terms of their credibility when it comes to these things, when they announced a couple of weeks ago, or 3 or 4 weeks ago, that Xabi Alonso was set to take over, and that the deal was all but sealed. And it turned out not to be true. So let's keep that in mind when we discuss this going forward. But Adi Hütter, he sounds like a great candidate for Borussia Mönchengladbach. But why would he leave a Champions League side? I mean, one of our listeners, Dana Minor, got in touch with on Facebook asking, how on earth can somebody leave a club that's set for the Champions League and join a team that, at best, is probably going to finish up in a Europa League spot?
I guess looking at the current situation in spring 2021, it's a fair question, and you would think that he wants to then, you know, reap what he sowed in with Frankfurt playing Champions League next year, of course, and it won't happen in Gladbach. Overall, you know, maybe there's a feeling for Adi Hütter that things are turning the wrong way in Frankfurt with Freddy Bobic primed to leave for Hertha. And, you know, a couple of players like, well, for example, Amin Yunus, they're only on loan. So, you know, there could just be things, you know, people moving on in summer. And all of a sudden you're looking at a different Eintracht Frankfurt and we've seen. And it's also partly true for Gladbach. You've seen that those teams from this part of the Bundesliga, you know, rankings, they occasionally they struggle the following season when they are in the Champions League, when they are in all three competitions. And this might be true for Frankfurt as well. At this stage, of course, it's a bit surprising. But I think Max Eberl has shown for over a decade now that he is an excellent sporting director. And there is absolute, you know, quiet surroundings for anyone trying to build something. Eberl has now demonstratively protected Rose at the press conference when they announced that he would leave. He's never let any doubt that he's still behind Rose. He believes in him. And that was, of course, noticed in the Bundesliga, probably even internationally. And I think the likes of Adi Hütter and other candidates that were discussed, is still discussed because it's not confirmed, looked at this and, you know, this put Gladbach on the map for anyone having success. And that probably also includes Adi Hütter, who's never stayed longer than 3 years with his clubs.
I mean, 3 years is pretty much a perfect span of time for any coach or most coaches because, I mean, most coaches, they have their philosophy and their philosophy is set and they are basically telling their players sort of the same things week in and week out. And at one point, you know, that message gets old. So 3 to 4 years is probably ideal span of time span for any coach at any given club. Because as Pep Guardiola said to a Catalan journalist back when he started at Bayern München, he thought that, you know, staying at Barca that last season was a mistake because the players were weary of what he was telling them and they were tired of what he was telling them. So 3 years, probably a great amount of time to spend at any given club in that regard. Additionally, and I think that is probably even a bigger point if Hütter indeed should decide to join Borussia Mönchengladbach, I think that stability of Max Eberl there, that is really speaking in Gladbach's favor because now Frankfurt are promoting a guy who used to be in their scouting department. A lot of unknowns going forward. And knowing the world of football, given the season that Silva's having, given that Jovic might be on his way back to Real Madrid at some point, you sort of see, you know, this team sort of is going to be looked at by the bigger boys in Europe. And a lot of those players are not going to be there next year, are they?
Yes, I think, you know, as much as Gladbach entering the Champions League also in previous years, you know, these teams do get picked apart in Bundesliga because they don't have the financial backing to simply hold on to all their players. That's basically only Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. So that might be something Frankfurt will experience last year, and they have done in the past with, you know, with other players, and, you know, of course, Jovic, including Jovic himself. And so maybe there is a little bit, Gladbach has the edge here a little bit on development structure, infrastructure of the club, and it may play a role in the decision that is, you know, I try to be defensive here. So it's not yet confirmed because we had the Alonso, well, chapter a couple of weeks back. And but as you say, as you know, this is, it's looking likely now. Bild has announced this, and I think even more so important was announcement by Kicker, who announced it actually from both journalists, sort of journalists covering Gladbach now for a long time, and also from Frankfurt. So they brought a piece together on this being the absolute most likely or, you know, soon to be announced scenario. So it does, you know, it looks very likely now.
Going by the style of football that Adi Hütter is playing at Frankfurt, do you think he's a suitable candidate? Is he an ideal candidate to take the Foles forward into the future?
I think so. I mean, it's definitely not different from the broad idea that someone like Marco Rose has tried to implement and maybe lost a little bit in the second season, but it's, you know, playing football on front foot. Whether it's going to be a back three and a heavy focus on the wing, like Frankfurt now has with Kostic, for example, that remains to be seen because I think Hütter is good enough to adapt his material to whatever he wants to play. But generally, you have a lot of powerful strikers, and ideally, you could play three strikers, and I think that is the football that you would like to see, and that is also how the Gladbach team has been shaped in the last 2 to 3 seasons.
So, exciting times going forward in the Bundesliga. And, you know, I mean, given that Hütter is going to end up at Gladbach, if that is going to happen, you just see that game of musical chairs of coaches moving around all around the league, because this is most certainly going to have a knock-on effect, because obviously Frankfurt would like to have somebody taking over for Hütter, and they're probably not going to promote a youth coach, I would assume, going by the fact that they're indeed a Champions League side next season. Before we talk about Frankfurt's match, let's talk a little bit about your arch rivals there at Erster FC Köln, who had a very important home match against Mainz 05. Well, you told your family that you were sick and that only watching football could cure it in order to watch as much football as possible leading up to this podcast recording. So you actually watched the match between the two Carnival clubs, and it really lived up to that Carnival moniker, didn't it? Because it was a wild 90 minutes. What's your take on that match?
I'm glad, Nick, you said it, you know, the whole Carnival aspect, because, you know, my words may weigh differently coming from Gladbach's side. But yeah, it was an interesting match. I think probably the most interesting, one of the most interesting Cologne matches of the season, in terms of action on the pitch and in the box. Yeah, and I thought Cologne would see this through at halftime, or, you know, beginning of the second half. And then, yeah, the turnaround came. I think Mainz is, after all, the more mature side in terms of the football they are able to play and individual skills. And we've seen that with the goals they scored in the second half. However, they left, you know, they left a lot of the pitch to Cologne. And I think with the likes of Duda, Kainz had a good match, I thought, as a returnee. I think it was his first starting 11 this season. Anderson up front. Better options for Cologne. Better options overall, but certainly for this clash. And yeah, they delivered. You know, it was more on, you know, on the penalty and getting ball in the box. But, you know, it was an open match, and Cologne could have nicked it, could have won it. They had their chances. But as I was saying, I felt Mainz, when they dialed it up, they were a bit more fluid in how they could explore the space. And that's also kind of the story of the equalizer and of the third goal.
Yeah, the third goal actually came in extra time. And that is when Cologne had committed a lot of men forward, and Mainz then ruthlessly counter-attacked and nicked that win. I mean, on the one hand side, you want your team to push forward and you want your team to secure as many points as possible. But when you're in a situation like Cologne, wouldn't it have been the more mature thing to do after 90 minutes to say, okay, we're not risking that one point that we're getting our hands on now?
In hindsight, yeah, probably. But as I was saying, there were lots of opportunities, and, you know, Skiri is also pushing forward. Rechabai came on, and these are options. These are players who scored late winners, for example, in Gladbach in the derby. You just gotta try it. I know nowadays a home match doesn't count for much anymore, but I think, you know, coming from this match with a victory would have been huge for Cologne. Now it's it's sort of completely flipped around for them. But I think they just felt that they could hurt in the center of the pitch. They could hurt Mainz more than what Mainz could have done or did to them. You know, as I was mentioning, Duda and Skiri, Hector, I thought had a good game. They were pretty much in control, but it just sort of, with Cologne, and that's often the scene, just slips away, because then all of a sudden there's just a lapse in concentration, you know, and there's that run by Niakate in injury time, and then, you know, Maveni is through on the wing, and that was that. So yeah, it was a risky approach in the last half an hour for Cologne, and yeah, it didn't pay off, and now of course they're staring at the abyss a little bit.
Well, and when you're staring at the abyss, it's time to bring in a new coach. Well, I mean, that's how the business of football works. It's not really, I mean, there have been many articles, scientifically researched work, looking at the sort of phenomenon of firing your coach and bringing in another one. And actually, most of these articles tell you that the effect of, you know, hiring and firing coaches at this point of the season and overall is quite likely next to zero. It maybe gives you a push for two or three matches, and then sort of everybody drops back to their normal performances once the team has sort of set into their first starting 11 once again. So for the Billy Goats, they have fired a well-known fireman in Friedhelm Funkel, who sort of has been working all over West Germany. I don't think he's worked for your team, but he's worked pretty much for any other side playing in the Bundesliga and Bundesliga 2 around the Ruhr area, I feel. So what do you make of that move? I mean, out goes Markus Gisdol, the once-hailed laptop coach. In comes Friedhelm Funkel, the not-so-laptop-y coach.
I think it's an odd move in a way that everyone who involved probably struggles to see how this looks like a well thought through move. Of course, there were rumors that this was going to happen, or this was almost announced. I think Kicker again had a story that this is going to happen if Cologne doesn't get 3 points, or at least one from this match. And so it feels a bit result driven in the sense that Cologne did have a decent match. Again, it was one of the better ones of the season. Okay, they were unlucky, but there were so many performances, and Cologne supporters would agree here that they were absolutely appalling this year. So it's a bit what do you want as a club? However, I can understand that there was this potential push that could happen for one or two games. Otherwise, it will just regress back to the zero net effect of a new coach. However, if you get this for one or two matches now with 7 remaining, you might just get enough points from there. So maybe that is the calculation there that was done at FC or FC Clubhouse.
Well, good thing for them that the next two matches are against Bayer Leverkusen and RB Leipzig.
Well, traditionally against Leverkusen, certainly Cologne quite often carved out a good result. So maybe that's part of that is thinking is to get a win over Leverkusen and sort of kickstart the rest of the season.
All right, you heard it here first. Moving on, Eintracht Frankfurt against Wolfsburg. Now, this is truly a lesson in efficiency by the Eagles, because they managed to create 4 goals from 8 shots, an XG of 0.75. Yes, 0.75, so that's below one expected goal in total. The Wolves, on the other hand, created a whopping 20 shots, an XG of almost 2. But, they lost out to that ruthless Frankfurt side. So what did you make of this crazy encounter between those two sides that seemingly are set to compete in next season's Champions League?
I think amazing 90 minutes of football to watch. Of course, now discussing a 7-goal match. Before that, Frankfurt, Mainz and Cologne was 5-goal match. But of a different quality, certainly. no offense, but, these two are just at each other. Wolfsburg being a team that presses high, that really goes for it, and Frankfurt are just so fluid and clinical once they have the ball in the way they go forward. And you can see they do believe in scoring at any moment. And that's the story pretty much of the Jovic goal, where Silva just does this power run. The ball gets to him. He has ricochets off the defender. He's still in the game. I think it was Brooks. So, and then the ball is almost going out and he just tackles it to an assist and Jovic just hits it home. Not many teams score from that playing position, right? And Silva then remains deadly on the 3rd goal. And it's just, it was a lot of back and forth. I think this hit the record number of sprints. I don't know the exact number, but it must be somewhere in the 700s of sprints executed on the pitch. So a lot of intensity, and I don't think many teams currently can go that speed. Probably not even Bayern Munich, being a little bit, drained by the Champions League season. So really good 90 minutes of football. I unfortunately couldn't watch the entire match, but what I've seen looked amazing.
Yeah, and I hear your point about Frankfurt always looking like they believe like they could score, because I remember that game against Borussia Dortmund they played, and they got that late goal, and actually it was just that you thought that Hummels had cleared the ball, and you thought, okay, it's going out for a meaningless corner kick, nobody's going to commit forward, but then somehow the Eintracht player just gets onto the ball, crosses into the area, and borders headed home into the net, and Borussia Dortmund, they don't look like they know what has hit them. So both of these sides, they're going to play in the Champions League next season. As we discussed earlier, Frankfurt probably without Freddy Bobic, maybe even without Adi Hütter. Wolfsburg, on the other hand side, they have Jörg Schmadtke and Oliver Glasner staying put, as seemingly. So all things considered, who do you think is better prepared for European football out of the two of them?
Well, I think maybe Frankfurt has the edge on the attacking quality or the look of the performance on the pitch. But I think Wolfsburg has shown throughout the season that they can play a very efficient, a very physical football. And that probably gives you good results in Europe. Now, that said, of course, you have to then take into account that you play way more matches and, you know, travel, you're up road. So this really intense midfield pressing they exert and really controlling, bossing the pitch with Schlager, Arnold. And then you have the runs of, you know, Steffen or Baku. They have to really be able to show that throughout the entire campaign, then at least until the winter break in the Champions League. But I do think they have this physicality that the big teams in the Champions League also show, where they just boss off the smaller teams who play great football. That's why they're there. But, you know, it's a little bit of showing on the pitch that you're not to be taken too lightly or pushed over. And I think Wolfsburg have it in them to maybe get good results in the Champions League, I would say.
Yeah, and, you know, additionally, as I mentioned earlier, I do think that this Frankfurt side is probably going to get picked apart during the summer. And, I mean, that's happened to them before. I mean, I remember that they lost Rebic, Haller, and Jovic in rather quick succession, and they managed to you know, find suitable replacements for all three, in a sense. But, hey, that was during Freddie Bobic's time at the club, and he's now going too. So a lot of unanswered question in regards of what is going to happen over there at Frankfurt. So it's a bit of a wild card for me. Well, moving on to our last match in part one, Stuttgart against Dortmund. Now, these two teams, they tend to produce quite epic matches between the two of them. And this weekend's Topspiel truly lived up to its billing. Kalasic scored the only goal of the first half as Dortmund struggled to find their feet. However, in the second half, things got better for the other Borussia. Manuel, what happened?
Well, I think if I had the answer to that, a lot of Dortmund supporters would, you know, listen to my news or read my weekly newsletter on Borussia Dortmund. Dortmund is really a mystery, I have to say. In the first half, you watch their game, they are in control, get about 6-7-1 shots, but it's all not too convincing. It's decent build up, you know, with Dahoud, Bellingham, Delaney. They're controlling midfield, but Stuttgart always looked sort of threatening. And then with their, I guess it's their plan B now, with Sosa, you know, a really looping cross onto Kalajic. Before that, it was a run by Gonzalez or Silas. So this is kind of Stuttgart's plan B, but it works in an excellent way. They scored the first goal and somehow they looked like the team who could go on and score the second goal. And finally, eventually Dortmund turns up and turns it around. I think it was just with the early goal they got in the second half, they had more space and finally remembered that it's all good and well to pass the ball around the box, but you have to make these fast 1-2s or layoffs to actually really move the defenders, which they weren't able to do in the first half. In the second, they did. And after all, it's Dortmund, so they have depth in their squad, and they turned up again, you know, with players who could make the difference. I thought, you know, bringing on Knauf was good. He really can get into the sort of dribbles and one-on-one situation on the wing. And yeah, he gets the winner, you know, playing against City, now getting the winner in the Bundesliga, first goal. It's quite a story for him.
It is, and you know, it's going to be exciting where his career is heading from here on out. Well, I think this match is sort of a perfect mirror picture of Borussia Dortmund's season so far, because, as you said, in the first half, plenty of possession, but they're not really doing anything with it, and Stuttgart's actually looking like they are able to hurt them. In the second half, they're actually turning up and they're creating some magical moments. But despite that, I mean, when you look at that second goal for Stuttgart, Dortmund are leading 2-1 at that point. Yet they sort of commit enough men forward to run into a counter-attack where Stuttgart suddenly is having a 4-2 at the other end. And that is unforgivable. That is madness. I mean, a side like Stuttgart is certainly going to punish it. But, you know, when you have these sort of defensive errors in the Champions League against even bigger teams in the league, yeah, you're always going to get found out. And I mean, that is basically happened too many times this season, despite there being some occasional glimpses of brilliance by the Dortmund side. So for me, it really boils down to the fact, was letting go of Lucien Favre a mistake in terms of, you know what, maybe you should have gone for a more high-profile solution than Edin Terzic?
Well, yeah, I think it just, again, shows what you said earlier, referred to, you know, a change of a manager, and that was of course for the relegation zone battle. But it's also most often true for the teams high up and in the table, because the squad has a certain quality in it, and it's also in the composition of the squad. What are they capable of doing together? So in Wolfsburg, as we just discussed, you have a very structured side, and they're very physical, and they can build possession, and they can build dominance in midfield. And Dortmund has this almost run-and-gun style football, which is fantastic at times, and they get across the pitch in 10 seconds with wonderful 1-2s, and, you know, Haaland is there to finish it, and you have a lot of exciting players who can easily go past two or three players. However, they always drop their guard and concede really ridiculous goals. As you said, the second goal by Stuttgart, it's just crazy to think that a team that is pushing for a Champions League semi-final and another qualification for the Champions League does not then see off a team, you know, away, a team that just got promoted, just, you know, see them off 2-1 and score a counter-attack later on. No, it's always game on with Dortmund until the dying minutes of the match. So it's a bit crazy.
Indeed. All right, this is going to be the last words for part one. Join us in part two, where we are going to take a closer look at the battle against relegation. So here's part two of Talking Foosball. Let's start with some of the matches that were going on in the battle against relegation. And how about Friday night's fixture between Bielefeld and Freiburg? Another hard-fought Bielefeld match. Great result for the team from the town that probably doesn't exist. So we're probably just watching holograms taking on those real Freiburg players. I think the less said about the match, the better. Needless to say, Bielefeld actually had the better chances, but not really brilliant chances. In the end, an own goal by was it Santa Maria got them actually deserved 1-0 win. So this is 7 points from the last four matches for Bielefeld now, and that begs the question, can they actually survive in the Bundesliga? Because 7 points from four matches during this phase of the season, that is actually quite good for a side that is looking to avoid relegation.
It is, and I think Bielefeld is now, well, it's really came on for Bielefeld. Frank Kramer, now the new coach, has changed things around a little bit, brought in some players who were benched before, and it just looks like there's a bit more freshness to the squad and belief, and they showed it in the second half, getting more and more dangerous, scoring that, well, lucky win. And I think Ortega, the keeper, said afterwards, we score crazy, weird goals afterwards. And that's probably also true for this one. But, you know, it's these kind of wins you need to get to be saved eventually. And it looks like they believe in themselves, and that's always the first step. That's what Schalke or other clubs have been trying to do the whole season, and that has failed spectacularly. With Bielefeld now, yes, they're certainly in the race, and I can see them staying in, given what just happened with Köln, and Hertha is struggling still. So yeah, they're in it.
Actually, they're actually taking on Augsburg on the road, and then Schalke the following week, which means that Augsburg, we sort of thought that they were going to be out of it, but then they lost on the road to Schalke this weekend. Another match that, you know, we don't need to discuss thoroughly, because it was not a really brilliant match. But, you know, if Bielefeld indeed gets 3 points against Augsburg and gets the result against Schalke, suddenly Augsburg are back in it as well. Schalke's win, of course, which is nice for the club and the fans, was their only their second win of the season. Not a glamorous performance by any stretch of the imagination, but it was the first win under new coach Dimitrios Gramosis. And for the Royal Blues, it's probably going to be a relief that they are now on more points than Tasmania Berlin were after they finished their negative record-setting season back in 65-66. By the way, we have an episode out on that season on our Patreon channel if you want to hear about just how awful Tasmania were during that one season and the top flight. But as for the result between Schalke and Augsburg, this really showed why A, Augsburg is really a crap team to watch, and B, Schalke didn't necessarily live up to that label of being a Bundesliga-worthy team, did they?
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier that Stuttgart sort of has their plan B in attacking now with some injured players. And I think it showed that match showed that Augsburg doesn't really have a plan B. So they are looking to, you know, look solid defensively and then hit teams on the counterattack, and then conceding an early goal against Schalke threw that overboard. And they never really took the game to Schalke, and Schalke was, in control most of the time and looked a more threatening side and deserved win. Probably too little too late for Schalke, but of course, you know, they still have to continue and try to get points no matter how.
Yes, I mean, at this point, they're guaranteed to be the second worst side in Bundesliga history. If they gather one more point, they'll eventually catch up to SV Wuppertal, who finished their Bundesliga season on 14 points. So that's probably going to be the goal for the next six matches to, you know, get past those couple of teams that only got 14 points during their one season in the Bundesliga. Another team that is, you know, getting back into that fight against relegation is Werder Bremen. I mean, four matches ago we said, well, 11 points, done and dusted. Well, four losses on the bounce, now a 4-1 loss against RB Leipzig. Looks like Werder is actually, it's going to be a tough end to the season for Werder Bremen and Florian Kohfeldt, isn't it?
Yes, that's certainly true. I think Werder has too little to offer to really easily now step it up and, you know, win some of the matches that remain comfortably. But of course, on the other hand, in their defense, if you hit the match against Leipzig the way they did, it was never going to be easy, you know, so outclassed, outbossed in midfield, not getting the second balls. A lot of several of the Leipzig goals were just sort of getting back into or around the zone, crossing it in, getting that goal, and it was over before it really started. You know, what was it, 3-0 after, what was it, 40 minutes? Way too easy. And of course, if you look at the recent results, it was you know, losing to Bayern Munich, losing to Wolfsburg. Yeah, would have been nice to get points.
Very unlucky against Stuttgart. Yeah. I mean, own goal by Ludwig Augustinsson towards the end of that match.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, they weren't necessarily outdone by Bayern. Only lost by one goal. They lost by one goal against Stuttgart. Struggled a little bit more against Wolfsburg. And yeah, against RB Leipzig, they were utterly outdone. For them, it's Dortmund next. And then it's Mainz, which is probably going to be one of their most important matches going forward. Because win that one and you might very well be out of the battle against relegation. Additionally, Dortmund, you never know which side is turning up. Would be nice for Werder if it wasn't the good Dortmund side. But going against the results that Werder have had against top six teams this season, probably going to struggle in that one as well. So yes, I'm not necessarily looking forward to the next couple of matches.
Well, Nick, I know how much you care for the club. I just hope they're, you know, safe on match day 34 when Gladbach is being welcomed at Weserstadion, so you know that we can take the points without doing any or causing any harm to Werder Bremen.
Well, that's
remains to be seen.
That's very nice of you. We've got one more match we haven't mentioned so far, and that is Bayern only drawing a match against a mid-table side. They were actually drawing against Union Berlin, and usually we would have featured that at the top of the show in part one. But, you know, this time around, we're actually confident that it's just a glitch. Bayern are sort of, they're struggling with injuries. They're struggling to putting a team together, and right now the gap at the top of the table is so big that it doesn't really matter that it's only one point. Did you have any other takeaways from that match between them and Union Berlin?
No, I think it's just a classic result when you are in between matches, such as the Champions League, and to have lots of injured players and you field a bit of, you know, the B squad. Berlin wasn't that threatening, but they sort of woke up towards the end and realized they could actually take one, if not 3 points, and it's a fair result.
Yeah, and finally, if you're a math freak and you've counted, you'll realize we've featured 8 matches so far, and you being a math freak, you would know that the Bundesliga has 18 teams, which means there have to be 9 matches, right? 9 matches. Well, turns out we're recording this on Monday night, and whilst we're recording, Hoffenheim are actually taking on Bayer Leverkusen, which is sort of a battle between a side that wants to get out of the battle against relegation. Hoffenheim on 30 points. Bayer Leverkusen wants to secure a place in the Europa League, so both need a win. But what we can talk quickly about is the fact that this is going to be the last Monday night match going forward. And that really is a big win for Germany's fans and ultras, isn't it?
Well, I completely agree. I think that's what the Bundesliga's brand is about. Although, you know, in that context, I shouldn't probably use the word brand. But it is true that the Bundesliga is all about, you know, fans, participating, voicing their opinion, being in a stadium, being present, away supporters as well. And, you know, this sort of fragmentation of the match day for the sake of, you know, maximizing TV right or TV income is not what the Bundesliga is about. And I think, it is a good sign forward that this won't happen again.
And what a way to finish Monday night matches with the most plastic of matches you could have chosen to get out with on Monday nights. I mean, but hey, the cynic in me is looking at this and I'm thinking, well, it might just be one of those things you have to keep on fighting from a fan's point of view, because, you know, that Champions League, it's going to be expanded in what was it, 2024? There are going to be more matches in that Swiss cheese league model or whatever it was called. Meaning that, you know, clubs like Bayern, like Dortmund, they are going to say, well, our players need more rest. We need to split up the match days once again. I mean, this is going to be used as an argument going forward. This is going to be used, you know, as a justification to once again split up the match day and spread it out over more days. I mean, that is my fear going forward, because I mean, obviously the reasoning behind putting matches on Monday night was the fact that Europa League football kicks off on Thursday night. So the DFL said that, well, players need more rest, so we have to play matches on Sunday evening, and some of the matches have to be played on Monday night. So they scheduled those 10 Monday night matches for one season, which in itself, I mean, as points go, I do understand that. But then again, these teams have big enough squads to rotate, and they have to rotate if they want to be a competitive Europa League side anyways. But yeah, my fear is that this is just going to be a victory that is going to be rather short-lived, going by how the road that football is currently going down.
Yeah, certainly right there. You know, it's only postponed, but if the sort of, you know, battle is you know, being kept up, then there are hopes that you know, the fans, the supporters can voice their opinion and just push back as much as they can. I think it's a straw man argument to say that the prayers aren't addressed it for the big clubs, and that's why the Monday slot has to be maintained. You know, they've dealt with this otherwise, and in the end, most clubs would probably or on the side of the supporters, so they should normally be outnumbered. Of course, they have a bigger voice in any meeting that the Bundesliga clubs have, the big names. But there are, you know, at least again going back to doing our maths, they are outnumbered. So, and I hope that the fan side or the fans' view will prevail.
This is it for another edition of Talking Fußball, which was as always produced by Aiden Rantoul. Manuel, great to have you on once again.
Thanks so much, Nick.
Make sure to follow Manuel on Twitter at Binger05. If you want to hit up the podcast, you can find us collectively at Talking Fußball. And if you want to get your hands on some exclusive extra content, make sure to find our Patreon page. Until next week, it's goodbye for now.